Welcome to a new episode of the Ask the Expert podcast. I'm Yulia Baidak, your host for today's episode and marketing manager at The Autonomous. The Autonomous is the global community shaping the future of safe autonomous mobility by enabling collaboration. Collaboration among leading companies and institutions around the world who work towards solutions to the various challenges we are still facing in this field. Today, I'm very excited to be speaking to Mike Potts, founder and CEO of StreetDrone, an Oxford-based startup focused on building the technology that allows people and businesses to benefit from autonomous last-mile delivery services. Mike is a firm believer in autonomous driving and thinks that autonomous delivery vehicles will be with us much sooner than robotaxis. His company, StreetDrone, develops both hardware and software to create efficient autonomous delivery systems up and down the supply chain. This way, saving companies money and improving services to trade and consumer customers. Hello, Mike, and welcome to the Autonomous Ask the Expert podcast. It's a real pleasure to have you here with us today. I was very much looking forward to having this chat with you. But before we dive into all these exciting topics that we want to cover today, I would like to give you the chance to briefly introduce yourself to our listeners and share with us a little bit of your journey and what makes you so passionate about AVs and your work at StreetDrone.
Sure. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for the invite. Really appreciate it. Great to meet you. Great to be here. I'm not an automotive person. I'm not an engineer. My background is e-commerce and marketing. In fact, I was one of the first people to work at Expedia in the UK. And actually, today I'm in Sweden at Ironride's Mesh conference. And I set up Sweden Expedia. It's one of the things I did when I was there. So my background's really digital. I'm passionate about digital and the values it's created. And that was my whole journey. I created out of Expedia, I created a marketing consultancy, a marketing technology consultancy. And then I worked as chief data officer for Havas Media Group in the UK for a while. And at that time, I was spent a lot of time talking to my very good friend, Mark Preston. Mark is from the automotive industry. Mark has done an incredible amount of motorsport, including winning five world championships in Formula E and founding a Formula One team. And so he comes from the automotive side, I come from the digital side, and we could never figure out how to work together. apart from, we did work together 40 years ago in a paper round when I was 12. But that was the last time we worked together. And we talked for a long time about how the hell we could figure something out to work together. And digital and automotive suddenly came together in the form of autonomy. And we've both had jobs in pioneering industries, me doing e-commerce and helping found these incredible businesses around Europe and him in Formula One and motorsport. And in fact, he started one of the first Formula E teams, battery-powered racing teams. So he's into pioneering stuff and I'm into pioneering stuff, and we came together to do this. And in fact, the first thing we thought there was an opportunity to do was to build platforms for other people to test their AD stacks on. Partly because we were doing some work for Roborace, and we figured that when you wanted to test your AD stack, you didn't want to put it on a Roborace car because they were worth £1 million. And crashing that would be a problem. So we came up with retrofitting a Renault Twizy with all the robotization needed in order to test autonomy on a cheap platform. And that's how we started the business. So that's the background. I'm not an engineer. I come from a very different background. It's been incredible to get involved in this incredible industry.
So do I understand correctly that you've been like best buddies and you decided to also found the company together?
Yeah, we've known each other for 40 years. We met in Australia in 1982. So 40 years we've known each other. And we've been best buddies ever since. Yep.
Super exciting. I've already read also fascinating things about what you do at StreetDrone, and I would like our listeners to discover a little bit of your company's story. So can you tell us What sets StreetDrone apart from other AV companies, and how did it all start back in 2017?
Sure. So as I say, it kind of started because we realized that often the companies that were starting out in the autonomous industry were software companies, and they didn't have an automotive background. And, you know, I'm surrounded by incredible world-class automotive engineers because of the background of Mark and, you know, people I've met over the years in Formula One and Formula E. And so we have a really a tremendous systems engineering team who design drive-by-wire systems and the functional safety that goes along with it. And it was going to be very, very hard for companies like Wave, for instance. Wave were our first customer. It was going to be hard for them to develop the automotive technology to allow them to test their automotive stack. And so that's really where we started. And we still do that to this day. So we have an advanced engineering team that builds platforms for universities and startups and people who are developing technology and want to test that technology on the road. So that's one side of the business. As we've grown, I think it's something not unique. I'd like to say the smart people in this industry are thinking about the near-term use cases of, and you said it at the start, I think there's a lot of things that come before robo-taxis. In fact, I wrote a blog post in 2018. I wrote a blog post about why autonomous taxis may never happen in my lifetime. And I was persuaded not to publish it because someone said, well, you're doing your industry a disservice. But I realize why I wrote it now. It's because it doesn't make commercial sense, not right now. It's going to take a long time. And I think one of the things, you know, it's very navel gazing, right? It's build technology for the sake of technology. And we don't do that. We don't want to do that. We want to start applying this wonderful technology to the things that happen shortly, not in the long term. And that's why we're trying to solve the problems that the supply chain are facing at the moment, actually. You know, we had a wonderful conference last week in Lisbon, or week before last. And one of our investors is Wilco, the high street hardware chain in the UK. And their CEO came and spoke. And he said, he was speaking about convenience. And he said, convenience isn't going anywhere, right? It doesn't matter how rich or poor we are. It doesn't matter if we're locked down or not. Convenience is something that consumers will always want. And consumers wanting convenience means huge change for the supply chain. Huge, huge, huge change. You know, more warehousing, more ships, more ports, faster delivery times. It used to be 10 days, now it's, you know, one. And so this huge change that's going on in the delivery sector at the moment means you can solve some real world problems with this kind of technology. You don't need to solve a taxi problem. There's not really a big problem to solve. But you do need to solve these genuine problems that supply chain is facing at the moment. And that's really what we're focused on. How do you bring this technology to bear as soon as possible? Not something that may never happen.
So could you maybe provide us with an overview of the products and services? You mentioned some of them. And I saw on your website that StreetDrone claims to be the only provider of high performance, safe and integrated full stack autonomous solutions. So, of course, I am particularly curious to find out more about your most recent one, so the driverless Pixie vehicle. But I think for our listeners, it's important to understand everything that StreetDrone provides at the moment.
Sure. I think full stack's really important, actually. I think if you miss out on a really clear understanding of how this stuff sticks together, you miss a lot of safety aspects. And I think those safety aspects are the most important thing. And therefore, we've really focused on gradually building the stack up from the bottom. And the bottom is where safety starts, and that's the vehicle. So having a clear understanding of what happens when things go wrong in an autonomous vehicle, and how the safety systems we've built, how the drive-by-wire works, how you don't build a vehicle with single points of failure. All of these things, they're really important. So we start off with the vehicle. And you know, as I said earlier, those vehicles, we provided them to we still provide them. We've sold, I think, 45 vehicles around the world now, to universities and the like, and they use them for the safe testing of autonomous software. And so those vehicles, obviously, they have sensors, and they have, and as well as that, we provide autonomous software. So we license our autonomous software, and we have a proprietary version, but we have a free open source version as well. On top of that, obviously, we have deployment services and engineering services. So one of the most critical projects we're doing is one that's been funded by the UK government at Nissan in Sunderland in the north of the UK. And that's involved us converting a truck that it's a private road only. And again, you know, we start off where it's slow, private roads, the least complex environments possible, mm-hmm. because that's how we get to market much more quickly than yeah. going on a public road where, you know, things go wrong. It's very bad. And we're using that vehicle to take trailers from a warehouse to the Nissan factory. And that's done, 90% of that route is done autonomously, and 10% of that route is done via a teleoperation system that we've constructed as well. So we've kind of got two halves of the business. One is providing the technology we've built to others to play with and to build on top of. And the main direction of focus of the business right now is how do we address some of the problems that are in the supply chain, starting with the first mile and ultimately going to the last mile. Again, more complex, huge legislative issues, and others, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And the Pixie you mentioned, that's a concept that we've designed around the last mile and local deliveries, hyper-local deliveries. So taking goods from the high street to your home. And if you go on the website, you'll see it. And it's a nice little design. We like it.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's actually quite exciting. And I'm just wondering right now, how many people work at StreetDrone? Because everything that you've mentioned sounds fascinating, but at the same time complex. And I'm curious. So since 2017, how many people brought together?
We have 42 at the moment. And that's growing. And hopefully we'll grow significantly. I think you saw we launched our Lisbon office a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, exactly.
So you know, again, it's hard finding talent in this space. Really tough. We've managed to bring an awful lot of people from all over the world. I think we've got something like 17 different nationalities in those 42 people. So it's a wonderfully diverse place to work, and you know, we absolutely love it. It's opening Lisbon gives us more access to talent and really, really high quality talent. So very excited about that.
Is StreetDrone a company open to remote working, or you prefer to have everyone based out of Oxford or Lisbon at the moment?
No, we always set the business up to be extremely remote, and we're happy for people to go and work from anywhere. I think during the lockdown we enjoyed it to start with, and then realized it hurts, right? So we give guidelines. Let's say we like people to be in the office 2 or 3 days a week, but we're extremely flexible as far as that's concerned. And you know, lots of people, as you know, love working from home, absolutely yeah. adore it. And they plug themselves in and they get a great job done, and that's great. Other people, especially where their working environment is the same place as they eat or they sleep, it's much more difficult. And, you know, so we have great office space that's open to everybody to come to the office and work together, or if you want to work remotely, they can.
Yeah, I think this flexibility is a great benefit to employees nowadays, and I believe it's very much appreciated in your company as well.
I hope so. People seem to like working at StreetDrone. I'm very proud of that fact.
Mike, you just mentioned that you opened another office in Portugal, this way launching in Lisbon. Why Lisbon? Why Portugal?
A few reasons. The weather's fantastic. You can't ignore that. No, I'm absolutely in love with the south of Europe. There's ridiculous amounts of incredibly talented people, and not an awful lot of tech company. I think, you know, Berlin, if I look at Berlin 15, 20 years ago, when it was an up and coming, you know, tech hub, that's kind of where Lisbon is now. There's been software companies that have moved down there, but nothing quite like StreetDrone. And so, you know, we've been welcomed with open arms, to be honest. That's one reason. The other reason is we have really good relationships with the universities in Portugal. Mm-hmm. So we've done quite a lot of work with Formula Student, especially the AI bit of Formula Student. In fact, some of our staff are judges on the panel, and we've helped the Formula Student AI guys quite a lot in the UK. So the teams that they have in Portugal know us very well. We've already taken one of the ex-Formula Student AI people in as our country manager in Portugal. She's superb. So, you know, it's access to talent. It's the relationships we already have. There's a growing manufacturing base down there. So an automotive manufacturing base and an R&D base down there as well. So there's some really interesting companies, especially in the Porto area, that work in automotive. And we can see ourselves working with those guys to build out products in the future. So, yeah, lots of good reasons, and the great weather as well. And actually, Mark, my co-founder, owns a flat there as well, which also helps.
Well, that's very convenient. And we talked about convenience earlier. From everything that you have said so far, Mike, I realize that StreetDrone is a company that is really all in for collaboration and partnerships, if I understood correctly. So maybe you could tell us, with whom is StreetDrone currently working to achieve autonomous delivery and logistics services? You mentioned already Nissan and the retailer from the UK, Wilko. Any other partnerships that are now ongoing?
Yeah, lots and lots. Because of my past in the digital side and the e-commerce, I've always been used to working with others in partnership. It's an essential part of e-commerce and that market. In fact, when I started Expedia, it was quite interesting. I started Expedia in 2000, this was, so really early in the day. It's still a startup, just a startup with a shed load of money because it was owned by Microsoft. Which was great, right? I mean, we got to play. And it had partnerships at the time with eBookers and lastminute.com, both of whom were, you know, enormous competitors. And here's the thing, e-commerce wasn't big at the time. So whenever eBookers or lastminute spent money, Expedia would sell more stuff. And when you're in this period of market growth, there's no such thing as a competitor, to be honest. It doesn't make any sense. We're not looking out the window and seeing autonomous vehicles everywhere. We still have a responsibility to work together, especially from a safety perspective. I think we have a responsibility to work together, and I'm very used to it. So we're absolutely into collaboration. There's a reason I'm sitting in Einride's offices right now. We want to work together on stuff. I'll just talk about a couple of projects. One was a project called Encode, another government-funded UK project. And we worked with teleoperation software company, Voices, worked with a cybersecurity company, Angoka. We worked with Coventry University, who helped us to understand whether or not our cybersecurity was good. We worked with a company called TRL, who used to be a government automotive safety agency in the UK. And so, you know, often these projects, certainly in the UK, I don't know about anywhere else, but in the UK, you're forced into relationships. And we love it. The project we have at Nissan in Sunderland, we're working with Hitachi. We're working with an OEM called Terberg, the truck manufacturer. We're working with Vantec, who have the distribution center there. So, yeah, there's lots of bits of the stack that we can't do, and we don't want to do. We don't want to reinvent wheels. We'd rather just integrate all of these great technologies and great businesses into what we do and provide the platform for them to be on. So, yeah, collaboration is incredibly important to us.
Yes, and collaboration is also very important for us at The Autonomous. Is actually the reason why we exist. It's our vision for this space, for mobility, and particularly on topics that have to do with safety. So when it comes to safety at The Autonomous, we believe there should be no competition between OEMs and technology companies. So what we do in our innovation stream, we are forming different working groups to tackle these challenges together as an ecosystem. What do you think about collaboration in this particular field of safety for autonomous mobility?
Yeah, I can't overstate how important that aspect is for us. For me personally, it comes down to you can't let anybody ruin the fun. As soon as somebody goes out there and does something stupid, we all suffer. And I don't want to see that happen. And we come from a place of safety. And our functional safety work comes from our experience in automotive, but in Formula One and Formula E. And, you know, we know what crashes do. And that's not a place we want to be. I do think, you know, including insurance and cyber and functional safety and understanding of that stuff is so incredibly important. We work with the BSI, we work with TRL, we work with government agencies and the insurance companies on making sure that this stuff gets surfaced, because there are still rogue companies out there who are doing things that I don't believe are safe, and not from an automotive functional safety perspective. The example I often quote is I see far too many companies operating vehicles remotely from remote locations using PlayStation steering wheels. And that's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. You know, you cannot design a system based off a PlayStation steering wheel. It's very important that we address those kind of safety issues, as well as the obvious ones, the cyber ones, the insurance ones, and the AD software is often the one that everyone thinks about when they think about safety. It's the last one you want to think about. The first one you want to think about is the vehicle. The vehicle ultimately is the thing that's going to need to be safe. Because at some point, all the AD stack is going to disappear. All the telecoms is going to disappear, and the vehicle at that point doesn't know what to do. So we start with that, and that's a really important part of what we do.
So you would agree that the main hindrance right now for AVs in general is still safety?
Yes, I think it depends on the market you're talking about, for sure. And I get quite frustrated, actually, because I think, you know, when I say autonomous technology to most people, even in government, even in the industry, they think passenger vehicles. And then I have to say, stop, please. That's not what we're talking about. You know, I don't ever want Street Drone to be compared with Tesla. I'm sick of the question. I don't want us to be compared with Waymo. I'm also a bit bored of that question. It's important that we address each use case as it comes up. Low-speed vehicles in off-highway conditions are not the same as high-speed vehicles in on-highway conditions. And the challenges off-highway at low speed are very, very different. And I wouldn't say safety is the biggest one, actually, there. The biggest one there is adoption of the technology immediately, and having to deal with companies that don't necessarily appreciate that technology. And the example I give is, you know, most retailers in the world have warehouses that are nearly 100% robotized and automated inside of the warehouses. And you walk outside and there's a dirty truck driving around and some bloke smoking a cigarette. And you know, it's the next bastion of automation is that environment, that low speed controlled environment, where safety isn't such an issue because you can control those environments greatly. You can make sure there's no people. You can make sure that, you know, the vehicles are geofenced. You can make sure they don't travel very fast. You can make sure that the safety is there. So it is very use case dominated. The challenge in that environment, as I say, is more trying to ensure that what we're trying to roll out is commercially viable and that you can explain that to a retailer or an industrial setting or a port or somewhere like that.
So how have you managed so far to convince your customers or potential customers that this is a viable solution?
Two parts of the business, one that's just doing proofs of concept around deliveries and the other one that's doing advanced engineering work. The advanced engineering side is pretty easy. It's a mature business. We provide platforms for people to build on top of. And our, to be honest, our credibility in from the automotive side of things has been the thing that's carried us through. It's good having a revenue generating business with lots of customers. I enjoy that. It means I'm not overly reliant on investors, although of course they are important. On the other side of things, I think, to be honest, everybody who's a good sized reseller or a port, or an automotive builder like Nissan, they understand that there are gains to be made from automating the first mile. Everyone understands it, but the reality is nobody's addressing it right now. So it's not been hard to convince them to talk to us. It's not been hard to say, hey, guys, you know, there's a solution here that's going to help you ultimately. What is hard is it's pretty expensive. And you know, convincing people of its commercial viability is tough, is going to be tough. I'm really thankful to the grant funding that we get to trial this kind of technology in situ in Nissan, for instance, because it's helping us understand the business models. So I think more than anything in the future, it's going to be about helping industry to understand those business models and get closer to the commercialization of whole autonomous systems for industrial settings like ports. So yeah, not hard to convince them that it's coming. Harder to convince them that it's commercially viable at the moment as we're developing.
I see. At the Autonomous, we also collaborate a lot, or we are in discussions quite often with standard bodies. Do you think that industry standards are going to speed up the arrival of autonomous vehicles on the road or slow it down?
I mean, by definition, it will slow it down, but it's right to do so. I think the standards are incredibly important. And I said it before, if you have rogue companies out there that aren't obeying the standards, whatever those might turn out to be, we're going to have problems. And I don't want to be tarred with the same brush as somebody who's hacking into a car and driving it around remotely. It's not the right way to do it. And unfortunately, it happens, and it happens a lot. And standards for me are about those hygiene factors that should be in place all the time. And you shouldn't be able to do anything unless you've got hygiene factors in place. That includes automotive levels of functional safety. So those standards are incredibly important. But they're also probably different again on a case by case basis.
Yeah.
The example being for me. The UK is trying to push forward the time at which it will give approval to vehicles without steering wheels and brakes and brake pedals. We're hoping that we'll be able to get type approval for those kind of vehicles in the UK early 2024. But they'll have to be low speed and they'll have to be less than 3.5 tons. So we're already looking at how do you segment the market a little bit. There's a huge difference between the standards that need to apply to a slow-moving, twizzy-sized vehicle compared to a truck, which probably needs a different set of standards and more care. More care is not the right description. A different way of testing, validating, and certifying the kinds of technology that are used.
So could you please tell me now what are actually your company's big plans for this year, and especially if we think about commercialization? Is this something that you have in mind for 2022 or next year?
I mean, obviously, we commercialize the test platforms that we build already. So as things get mature and we're happy they're validated and safe, we sell them. So that's how we've commercialized in the past. The big thing for this year is a Series A raise that we're involved in right now. So to all you investors out there, please pick up the phone. No, the most important thing we're doing right at the moment is finishing the project in Nissan. We think we'll be close to commercializing an industrial off-highway low-speed service in 2025. So we think there's probably a couple of years more that we need in terms of both experience of the technologies that we need to build around, but also experience of the markets. We're not truck experts. We're not port experts. We're not retail experts. We're learning incredibly quickly, but they all have their individual and unique use cases that need to be built around. And, again, autonomy doesn't work for everything. Anybody who says autonomy works for everything is not genuine. We need to work on a use case by use case basis, and we need to learn about each of those environments and what's going to make sense from a commercial perspective for each of those environments. So, yes, we're a few years away from commercializing an entire port or automation or entire industrial route or routes. We're looking at probably 2025 before that happens.
I see. I know that this is a very controversial topic, and it's probably also not what you are doing at Street Drone, but you mentioned it earlier, and I would like to ask you once again. So you strongly believe that robotaxis are not going to happen in our lifetime, or you think it's still possible if, and what is that condition?
I mean, almost to me, it doesn't matter. I suppose for me, if you compare the automation of a passenger vehicle with the automation of a service like a last mile delivery, the general public, all of us who live in towns and cities, are going to get an awful lot more utilization out of autonomy and last mile than they ever will out of an autonomous taxi. And that's partly down to cost. Yes, sure, in the long term, maybe we can make autonomous taxis as autonomous taxi journey as cheap as cheaper than a current taxi journey. But if you look at the phenomenal amounts that have been spent on developing the technology that goes into robotaxis right now, clearly charging people the same as they would a normal taxi is not going to get you to profitability. So we're still going through an insane period of investment, and those are not commercially viable in the same way that a traditional taxi service is viable. Now, there's some very, very smart people with very deep pockets that are working on this. Some of our customers as well. I hope that it happens. And there's good reasons for it happening, safety being one of them, for sure. But from my perspective, I want to concentrate on the things that bring the biggest utility to people. And autonomizing last mile, bring the cost down of deliveries, making sure that convenience is there for everybody. That's much more important to me. Having an autonomous BMW parts in the driveway that's probably going to cost 50 grand more than a normal one doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not going to get the utility back, but I am going to get a bunch of utility from more convenience, from better safety in towns, from getting rid of white vans driving around the streets, from changing that ecosystem completely. You get more utility. I don't believe you're going to get more utility from robotaxis. I may be proved wrong, but it doesn't really matter to me right now. It's all about how can we get this technology out there in the near term, make it as useful as possible, and solve real problems.
Mike, I think that we are soon coming to an end of this episode. So I have one last question to address. You mentioned it already. Maybe besides autonomous delivery services, what do you think the future has in store for the AV space, for the AV industry? If we were to look into the future, what do you think the future of autonomous mobility has in store?
Well, I'm really hopeful that I think we have to take a broad brush approach to what autonomy is. And I think most companies, including ours, have come at the problem from a pioneer's perspective. We build some technology and then we'll see how it fits. Slowly we're realizing how that technology fits. It's still very fuzzy, isn't it? But you can imagine, and I think it's already happening, that cities will start thinking about how to change their infrastructure, how to change their environments to suit that kind of mobility. Certainly, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to the local government in Oxfordshire. And when they make rules around roads and development, they're thinking about, you know, those big challenges. How do we get rid of traffic and pollution, and how do we get rid of all these white vans driving around all over the place? And autonomy and that kind of automation and it's absolutely forefront of their minds. So I hope that what the technology leads to is a change in the way of thinking about how we live in cities for the benefit of everybody. Not the benefit of the few. Again, that worries me about robotaxis. I hope that the future of autonomy isn't built around autonomy for everything. It's built around how do we make great use of this technology to change our way of thinking about, you know, how do we live in cities, and how do we address some of the problems that we're facing today. That would be my hope.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much for taking the time, first of all, today, and for everything that you have shared. It was a true pleasure having you here, and I'm very much looking forward to hopefully meeting you in person. And I believe that the Autonomous Main Event, our flagship event taking place in Vienna, true also virtually, but I would prefer to meet you in person here. So it's on 27th of September this year. We can send you, of course, the details so that you have everything. Thanks so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Been a great pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you also to all of you who listened today to our episode. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Mike. If you have any suggestions for our new Ask the Expert format, questions or guest proposals for our next episodes, please reach out to us via the contact form on the website or directly via email through contact@theautonomous.com. Stay tuned for our next exciting episodes. Thank you.